Hi everyone, thanks for being here. I'm Helen. Thanks Nick. It's so cool to be in a room with you guys again. you've been away so far. So I'm gonna read this like one big long thing that isn't really a poem, but I think I'm still allowed to read it at the Poetry Project because it also isn't really like anything else identifiable either. I started off thinking of it as a collage, but like that's not really true because in a collage you take things from elsewhere, and these I made them all up. So I think of it more like juggling. It's like got like seven or eight different threads, and they are up against each other and get shuffled throughout. It's indebted to some conversations that I had with Fazila Jiwa and Aaron Robinson and Anahita Jamali Rad. And it's called Arrows, as in A-R-R-O-W-S, although like I'm not totally above homonym puns, like Arrows. But and the subtitle is The Glorious Hotness of Frida Kahlo in Photographs. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's it. I'll just start. I have decided instead to do the whole dance in public. To show my body moving through some positions. I'm not doing this to overwrite the blank. It's still there, just further down the page. It's still infinite and important. The Spanish Civil War is called the Spanish Civil War because within one country, two sides fought, and eventually the fascists won and kept power for 39 years. Whereas the Mexican Revolution is called a revolution because when two sides fought, the fascists lost. When Diaz was deposed, dictatorship ended. Frida Kahlo, who was 3 years old at the time, was born again, a revolutionary and a communist. She often lied about her age to convey this truth. Once I wanted to explain my complicated terrain of stubble and thickets to a lover, and I overshared. I composed an email titled My Body Hair, a Summary, which contained a list of numbered points. Writing this email was intoxicating, like suddenly unleashing the story of my life. I'm still revising and adding to it, even though I sent it a long time ago, and that lover has moved on. Looking at a row of silk-screened Frida Kahlo throw cushions on a high shelf in a store brings me joy mixed up with mundane comfort and also turbulence in a way that holding a Vincent van Gogh paperweight never will. A Vincent van Gogh paperweight contains a picture of Van Gogh's art. A Frida Kahlo throw cushion depicts her human body. This is an inequality. When people talk about Frida Kahlo's body, they talk mainly about two things. I do not feel it is my place to enter this discussion, though whole books and films exist because others felt entitled. Instead, I want to turn the lens back on myself. Given who I am and who Frida was and what the world is like, there are good and bad reasons for my impulse. If I turn the lens back on myself, the good and bad reasons will cease to be separable. They'll come together in a gesture. My body hair, a summary. One. I got it early, like grade 4. 2. I didn't want it, but I didn't want to remove it either. What I wanted was continued abstinence from the question. I pretended it didn't exist. My Spanish family is technically not Spanish, but Catalan. The nation of Spain as a whole, and with it my grandmother, was traumatized by the Civil War, July 1936 to April 1939. My grandmother was 9 when it started and 11 when it ended. Then came the years of dictatorship, during which her language and culture, the names of her eventual children, became illegal. For example, my father, named Jordi at birth in secret, instantly became Jorge in public by law. A large section of this story is lost to me, and although I feel it could be my place to bear witness to the contents of the loss, that is not how loss works. The first time I saw art by Frida Kahlo, I was in high school. My mom took me. The gallery we went to, a 45-minute drive downtown, had 6 or 8 of Frida's paintings on loan and some sketches. The paintings were mostly smaller ones. It was the kind of exhibition that makes you think about the smallness of your city and the world. I do not remember having any clear feelings about the paintings or Frida, probably because I was not yet my full self. I was a teenager. I was small in the world. I was watching carefully to remember the details of the art for later, when I would know more. And I was watching other people. 3. Kids teased me about my hairy pits. We went to the waterslide park, where I disappeared down long plastic tubes without ever lifting my arms, which was possible. We went to the ocean, where I tried to swim using only forearms, only legs, which was dangerous, both socially and physically. When I got home, I shut the door to my room and began to snip my armpit hair with a pair of kids' safety scissors. The shorter my hair got, the more deliberate it looked, my hairiness, like a conscious choice, and the more mortifying. I couldn't make it disappear. Now it occurs to me how lucky I am. I could have drowned. My dance goes like this. I make a gesture and then step back, face a different way, revise, repeat, realizing gradually that the real action I'm performing is a kind of vibrational hovering, an arousal in the face of certain factors. It's not divisible. Everything accumulates, nothing is erased, though there are many retractions. Have you ever turned a vibrator on and put it down on a surface and watched it go somewhere unexpected? That's what this motion does. And I've been searching for a way to act that is as complicated and tender and decisive and powerful and slippery as all the factors bearing down. The blank begins shortly after my grandmother and her parents baked some money into loaves of bread and dressed up as peasants and fled to the mountains. They did this in an effort to hide from both sides. The fascists were opposed to their ethnicity and the Catalan socialist resistance to their upper middle class status, which loss of wealth did not by itself immediately remedy or conceal. There is a story that may or may not be true about them slicing up their palms with knives to appear as though they'd been doing hard labor. In that part of the country at that moment, my grandmother said in a moment of uncharacteristic openness, you could be killed for having smooth hands. But the cuts, if they existed, were not convincing. My grandmother and her family were recognized as the kind of people who might have money in their loaves, and the loaves were taken. They fled from farm to farm, lying and being discovered, until eventually, for an interval whose duration depends on the perspective of the viewer, they disappeared. I remember a heart and other parts outside the body in ink or maybe colored pencil connected by delicately looping veins, scissors, an accident not directly shown but implied repeatedly, or maybe it was shown and I forgot. I remember reading somewhere that there is no such thing as forgetting, only repression. A painting in which Frida's stately face is flanked by stately monkeys, dark eyebrows that were painted to meet like two wings on the bridge of the nose. Dark eyebrows that in photographs did not always seem to meet there so strongly, a perception which suggested to me at the time that the meeting of the eyebrows had been asserted in the art for effect. I have to take responsibility for this effect. It happened inside me, in conversation with the racism and sexism I had been steeped in, ideas about what a woman's eyebrows should be like, which in that small exhibition in the gallery an hour from where I grew up, the effect began to push up against. 4. Around 7th grade, I started surreptitiously shaving. Shaving would have been allowed if I'd asked. I could have had my own razor and a lesson, but speech on this topic was completely beyond me. So instead, I buzzed myself haphazardly with my mom's electric cow clipper from the 70s whenever the house was empty. I'd wait for the sound of the car pulling out, and then I'd be like, action stations. I often wish that critics would put more of themselves in their writing, like what they look like and what they're wearing. If some people are compelled to offer their human bodies in service of art, then so should everyone. This would still not be equality, but it would be something. On that afternoon at the art gallery, for example, I looked like a gangly white girl in bootcut jeans, some scattered zits, serious eyes, a very gay haircut that I didn't yet know was gay, a dense and bristling close-cropped carpet. I had dark eyebrows that through the lens of my teenage body insecurities, a function of layered and differential prejudice against bodies like mine, bodies unlike mine, and bodies both like and unlike mine, seemed always on the verge of meeting when I saw them reflected anywhere in a mirror or in glass, though in reality they were just two ships. I tweezed the area between them zealously like a border guard. Other kids, my friends, had a strange joke about my eyebrows based on the fact that the individual hairs are relatively long. They said if I ran a comb up through my eyebrows and back into my hair, it would all just be one, What a fabulous dreamlike thought. Instead of Helen, they called me Hairline on account of this fiction that my dense head of hair grew straight out from above my eyes. 5. In late high school, I bought myself a razor and put it nonchalantly in the shower. At this point, I was shaving legs, armpits, edges of pubic hair, but not like the meat of it, nipples. I had this idea that I had a unibrow. I don't, but perception is interesting, so I plucked very vigorously between my eyebrows to keep them separate. A meeting of two eyebrows can resemble wings or a bridge between realms. It is neither of these things. A meeting of four eyebrows can resemble love, two faces coming very close, but this is in the eye of the beholder. I know that this fixation with eyebrows in the art and image of Frida Kahlo is circular, self-feeding, that it cannot be teased apart from the racist, sexist gaze that initiated it. To say that the eyebrows were a bridge and the bridge was love does not correct the problem. All that can really be said is sometimes when you paint things, they become more present than in real life, existing. Sometimes when you look at a painting, you become more present. Parts of you that you weren't aware of come to the surface, good parts and ugly ones. In that gallery, I had an encounter from which I'm still surfacing. I'm gonna let the eyebrows go now. By the time my dad was 6, he had lost his name twice. The third was George. He needed this name to go to school in Canada, where his family had escaped to be addressable there. Then, and still even now, many people in Canadian schools were walking around with fake names because the state had created a hostile environment in which to have a real one. This group included many people whose ancestors had been on the land now commonly called Canada for millennia. It helps me to remember that the name of the country itself is artificial, a fiction sustained by tremendous violence. 6. 3 days after I went to university, I fell in love. She didn't shave and she didn't eat meat. Suddenly, I didn't either. My love was the repressed kind that I didn't admit existed even as I shaped and manipulated it. The same approach I had taken with my hair, though now I tried openly to love my hair, as if rehearsing for openly loving this woman who was only my friend. It wasn't easy. Ironically, my dad's teachers often preferred not to use the new name, instead referring to my dad and his three brothers as a collective, the Gurry Boys. Growing up, I absorbed that the teachers had been continuously exasperated by this entity. Another one of the Gurry Boys, these teachers would say with knowing looks, maybe rolling their eyes. But the collective was resilient and rich in unexpected powers. It taught itself to make gunpowder, started an attic fire, and adopted a stray duck. It dodged both parental abuse and visits from social services. As the collective grew older, it experienced in one part or another depression, drug addiction, alcoholism, schizophrenia, HIV, chronic fatigue, diabetes, hoarding habits, repressed sexualities, poverty, and a devotion to swimming in remote glacial lakes, the kind that completely frees your skin on contact. Some parts committed acts of violence and abuse. Some experiences and acts happened in all the parts at once, lighting up each quadrant of a grid. It survived variously and at different points in time in a shared apartment, social housing, the suburbs, jail, the street, a mental institution, my grandmother's basement, a mountain, a small town, a different small town, the wilderness. As for my grandmother, she seemed always like she was floating. She never really looked at people. She looked past or through, around them. She existed on a plane that was completely apart from feelings. Her cruelty, when it precipitated like rain from a passing cloud, was seamless, natural. Though she was not considered an artist, my grandmother painted landscapes. Her materials were canvas, paper, watercolor, oil, the surrounding forest, and mountains. And at holiday dinners, when her wayward sons were gathered, one drunk, one angry, one twitching silently with panic, one phrasing an accusation, now two of them together making diarrhea jokes, one slamming down a plate as he stood to leave, she made self-portraits in the form of speeches about her former beauty. "I was 15 years old at the beach," she began, "even when I was 27 and a new mother." These images flew out into the strange air of her house, which smelled of must and rain and perfume and old cedars and especially mothballs, and were preserved. As my mom and I left the gallery, we did not speak much. If the resemblances in Frida's paintings had impressed her, she did not let on. "I found her kind of self-absorbed," she said finally. I was not offended on Frida's behalf because I understood instantly that this was no longer a conversation about art, if it ever had been, but an advanced family metaphor in which she was not Frida at all. 7. After my first year of university, I went to Denmark, where my mom grew up. I remember having to explain to my startled little boy cousins why I was so hairy that summer. They made faces as they listened. Older relatives suggested it was because my dad is from Spain, which was easier for them to say, I guess, than is becoming a lesbian. They pointed out my olive skin, though I'm pale even for a white person. Even though everyone in my family is white, these days most people from Spain are considered white, there's something going on here about racial difference. The way darkness, not the reality but the idea, and lesbianness, not the reality but the idea, I've always been queer or bisexual, came together in my hairiness is interesting. The way darkness and lesbianness were in this one instance substitutable, like in a recipe. Last year, I had a short, intense affair with a woman, Zed, who has lived through some trauma. Zed is strong and beautiful, a brilliant thinker. I fell hard for her. In one message, Zed tells me about her mustache, which she has threaded since high school. I've been telling her about my treasure trail and armpits. How she does not know what it looks like anymore exactly, but is certain that it is not cute. I send her a picture of Frida, one with a visible, adorable mustache and a question mark. No, that's a cute mustache, she says. And I feel a duty to report this truth, a situation in which I used an image of Frida Kahlo as a weapon. Accidentally, I would like to say, but not every unintentional harm is an accident in the larger sense. Facing backwards, I would like to say, friendly fire, but it depends how you trace the line between the sides. Zed sends me an essay about the whiteness of the feminist project of growing out body hair, about how for women of color it isn't always a choice, or rather the choice has different meaning and higher stakes. 8. Darkness and lesbianness are not substitutable as in a recipe. Hair is not a symbol for either. My hairiness, insofar as I have cultivated that state, has created no racial slippage. I'm still white. The places I have let my hair grow represent the precise amount of rebellion my privilege can purchase. In this sense, they're perhaps the whitest thing about me. The places I've let my hair grow represent the way my body is when left to its own devices. In this sense, they're perhaps the whitest thing about me. Improbably, though my grandmother and her family lost everything in the war, they emerged on the far side of it in possession of a pair of severely tarnished, thinly silver-plated candelabras, one of which I inherited. Confronted with a mystery like the candelabras, a material fact whose explanation is a blank, I'm sometimes tempted to make an equation, the kind I learned about in late elementary school. Opening bracket. Young person with family wealth, including bread with money in it, plus two candelabras, closing bracket, over B, equals the absent person I knew as my grandmother, plus two candelabras. The equation is simple enough structurally that, taken for granted certain basic skills, desire alone can solve it. And I'm saddened by the condition of a world in which such desire is often in short supply publicly. A desire to know something about war and class and ethnicity and hiddenness and the lives of girls and women. I experience such incredible desire. When I look at Frida Kahlo's painting A Few Small Nips, in which the artist lies bleeding from dozens of cuts while her husband stands over her with a knife, or The Suicide of Dorothy Hale, in which a wealthy and conventionally beautiful woman simultaneously dives from and lies dead beneath a tall building, or The Two Fridas, in which Frida Kahlo holds hands with herself in the foreground of a stormy sky, I feel I'm being offered a solution for B, one that allows the story of my grandmother's life to flow through without interruption. And the story does, the story spills out everywhere. But the equation, of course, is a fiction. I just wanted to check how I'm doing for time. I don't know. Okay, I'll keep going then. 9. In my early 20s, I got mysteriously sick. The first symptom was overwhelming thirst, then hunger. I began to carry water with me everywhere. I'd always been a picky eater, but now I cleaned my plate and then the plates of my roommates. I was losing weight, 5 pounds, 10, 20. My ribs cast shadows on one another. As the illness progressed, I had hives, recurrent yeast infections, a sudden slew of dental cavities, enormous tonsils, headaches, constipation, and my heart would race all night. I wanted to sleep for days. My periods stopped. A strange thing started to happen when I sipped a glass of beer. My lips would swell to twice their size. Certain foods, an ever-expanding list, would fill my mouth with little sores. I got a tiny scratch on my knee from standing in a blackberry bush, and it took more than a week to scab over. I still have the scar. I went to a lot of doctors. I was tested for HIV, hepatitis, monodiabetes, thyroid conditions, heart conditions, hormone imbalances, vitamin deficiencies, parasites, celiac disease, disorders of the liver and kidneys, and several forms of cancer, among other things. My organs showed signs of damage, but there was no diagnosis. It was suggested I had clinical anxiety. It was suggested I stop eating anything I might be allergic to. It was suggested I had an eating disorder. Maybe at a certain point I did. It was suggested I have surgery to remove my sinuses, which were constantly becoming infected. Was I an alcoholic? Was I on drugs? Was I sure? A doctor informed me I'd had too many sex partners. Another doctor, an endocrinologist, saw the fine dark hairs growing in a line down from my belly button and noted them as a symptom of my condition. I started shaving them. This was the extent of her influence. My grandmother was intensely Catholic. She never accepted that her children were not. When I was little, she used to offer to babysit me on Saturday afternoons. This was in order that she could kidnap me for the night, driving out of town and checking us into a motel, calling my parents from a payphone when she was sure we were out far enough that it was too late for them to come and get me. She would relinquish me the next day after we attended Sunday Mass. The church my grandmother attended was everywhere, reachable via any highway in any number of small towns. That's what Catholic means. In the church my grandmother attended, queers deserved to die. They were an abomination. It said so in pamphlets she would give to my mom in thick, compact stacks so my mom could distribute them to others. My mom would accept the pamphlets graciously and then come home from the lunch or the floral display. Either my grandmother was fond of dragging my mom endlessly through rose gardens, or my mom was fond of performing the condition of being dragged endlessly through rose gardens and place them in the recycling bin. These stray leaflets being caught by the wind and blown up and down our block on collection day were my first definitive proof that my grandmother neither loved nor approved of Frida Kahlo, not the real Frida Kahlo, even though she also was her, and that my mother, although in possession of an opposing view, was in no position to love Frida either. Frida Kahlo was a revolutionary and a communist. During the Spanish Civil War, which began 16 years after the Mexican Revolution ended, and the year Frida Kahlo, who sometimes lied about her age to better align with her ideals, turned 26 and 29, Mexico, with Frida as its citizen, supplied the Republican socialist side with money, rifles, and food. Frida and her husband also fundraised independently for this effort. It's strange to think of guns arriving in the Catalan villages, the mountainous countryside where my grandmother was, bearing the fingerprints of Frida Kahlo, the traces of her beliefs and body and work. It's strange to think of coins and bread, and to wonder in relation to my grandmother which way the guns were pointing, if the bread was for eating. 10, I flip-flopped. My body hair was the canary for what other people might think. I shaved to have sex with men and with women who shaved. I grew my hair out to have sex with women who didn't shave. When for a few months I worked on farms in the mountains outside Barcelona, I grew everything out lush. I wanted to be a beautiful Spanish hippie. But between farms, passing through the city, I'd feel immediately gross and shave it all off. Once my razor got too clotted with hair after shaving one of my legs to continue with the other, I spent maybe 2 weeks in this state of having one leg that was very hairy and another that was catching up. It's hard for me to imagine anyone killing anyone for having smooth hands if they were willing to work, but I've never been in a war. It is easier for me to imagine the guilt of privilege and the self-loathing of reduced status combining in the imaginations of my grandmother and her family to create an outsized fear. I've always wanted to believe that the wealthy are just self-hating peasants. This belief would allow me to construct a parallel between my ancestors' experience of the Spanish Civil War, whose factions represented aspects of my ancestors' own selves, to the extent that I might say the conflict lived inside them as much as they lived inside it, and some stuff I've lived, though I've never been in a war. When I was 14, my friend who was 15 lost her earring in shag carpet. We searched on hands and knees until our faces came close. I had an impulse, unpremeditated physical, to lunge forward and put my lips on hers, but I didn't want my world to end, so I fought it. I stayed frozen, my fingers lost in wool. I didn't move for 8 years, until right around the time when my grandmother died. Kai Cheng Tom writes in an open address to her fellow queers, "Your body is not a weapon." The reason I need Kai Cheng Tom to remind me of this is that as a queer, I've experienced my body as a weapon. A collection of triggers, what I had to use to overthrow a particular kind of despotism, a thing that could get flipped and used against me if I wasn't careful. But it was also the thing I could begin to inhabit, an elaborately luscious peace machine, when my despot was laid to rest, and her body was also my body, and it was not a weapon either. 11. The first time I slept with a woman with a full bush, it was a revelation. I had absorbed all this anxiety that going down on women with lots of hair was gross, which had been driving my spasmodic crotch shaving cycle. But it wasn't gross, at all, at all, at all. I got angry about my early dating life. Men lied to me. This anger was like a hair I couldn't quite seem to swallow, my desire flooding after it, trying to wash it down, more and more desire. My grandmother died on my birthday. Unlike Frida, I'm not lying about this timing to convey any deeper truth, so such truths and the lies that make them possible compel me. At the funeral, the priest confused my grandmother's name with mine and delivered my eulogy until someone, a church friend of my grandmother's, called out loudly, interrupting him. This situation, all of it together, made me cry. Frida Kahlo often depicted herself as La Llorona, a mythical Spanish ghost woman who'd been sent back from the gates of heaven and was always bursting into tears. Now I've been sent back too. "Don't come crying to me," Frida Kahlo wrote in all caps in her diary. And then one page later, "Yes, I come crying to you." There's a doodle Frida Kahlo made in the last decade of her life of a reclining pregnant angel woman with hundreds of tiny sperm flying straight at her through the air from all sides. Frida captioned it, "The classic love without arrows, just spermatozoa." The sperm are well aimed and pointy. They're wiggly, but they could still be arrows. 12. Lately I shave the edges and periodically underside of my pubic hair. Sometimes I shave my legs, often I don't. I grow my armpit hair in the front of my bush and the hairs around my belly button out full. Sometimes I trim my underarms with scissors the way a man might style a beard. The particular pair of scissors I use, I've had since I was a kid. In my early 20s, I went traveling in Spain. I had hardly any money, so I worked on farms in exchange for meals and a place to sleep. I was in the same mountains my grandmother spent her girlhood hiding in. At the time, I did not think much about this parallel. The power of repression is such that I honestly believe the purpose of my trip was pleasure. There are many ruined castles in those mountains, crumbling since the Middle Ages. The farmers lived in half-tumbled-down, semi-roofless stone structures right alongside their chickens. I slept out in the fields. I was trying to be a laborer, but it wasn't going well. I was still sick with a mysterious illness that had gripped me for 2 years. I was weak and blotched with hives. A farmer told me directly I ate too much and did not work hard enough. Scorpions crawled between my blankets as I slept. I shook them gently loose each morning. I moved on to a new farm thinking this will be different, and it wasn't. I felt awful, got winded collecting firewood. I tried to bathe one day with a garden hose, there was no shower, and inadvertently broke a crucial link in an irrigation system. A farmer came running up the hill to shout at my naked body while icy water spurted over us. The landscape was like something I'd dreamed. The sound of cowbells made a universal music, even on the highest cliffs. For some reason, I kept trying. 13. There's a mole on my inner thigh I pluck the hairs out of when I remember to. I think about what it would mean to stop that, to let that dark little lump with 7 or 8 wild wires become a tiny and deliberate garden. I think about the question of my body hair often. It definitely exists. When people talk about Frida Kahlo's body, they talk mainly about 2 things, hair and pain, of ethnic, cultural, political, physical, and accidental origin. It's not hard to see why people would be interested in these themes. Nobody is separate from anybody else. Nobody fights for himself alone, Frida Kahlo wrote in her diary, speaking of revolution. I know about this and several other insights because I bought a color reproduction of Frida Kahlo's diary. In the capitalist context I live in, it is my diary. This is bizarre. And in the context Frida wrote in, himself was supposed to mean everyone. It's true and it is not at all. It's an incredibly fraught place to begin. Thank you so much.